Now, Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump campaigned in Wisconsin Wednesday night. He spoke to more than 1,000 supporters at the Waukesha County Expo Center.
Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton's campaign also targeted Wisconsin this week. Her daughter Chelsea spoke in Green Bay late this morning.
Robert Mentzer joins us now, as he does every Friday, to talk about that and other top stories from the past week. He's a storytelling editor with USA Today Network Wisconsin, based in Wausau. Rob, welcome back.
Hey, thanks.
So for a while there, polls had Hillary Clinton way out in front. More recent polls, it's a closer race. So here comes Donald Trump back to Waukesha. What did you make of this visit?
Yeah, so Donald Trump is not having a great week post-debate, but one thing he did make time for on Wednesday was a campaign rally in Waukesha. I think everybody knows by now that that Waukesha and sort of the suburban Milwaukee counties are among the most Republican places in the entire country, and so any Republican who wants to win Wisconsin needs to really run up the score in Waukesha County. And I looked it up, so new polling shows Trump with something like 41% support in Waukesha County, which is not as bad as it sounds. Hillary Clinton's at 27% support, so like clearly Trump is way ahead. But what I looked was in the 2012 election, Mitt Romney got 67% support in Waukesha County. So it shows what a gap there is right now in that sort of reddest of the red counties. So the Trump campaign shows up and tries to rally the faithful and attack Hillary Clinton and try to get people out of the Gary Johnson column or out of the staying home column and to vote Trump.
Right. If you're a Republican, you want to win a statewide election in Wisconsin, you got to knock it out of the park in Waukesha and adjacent counties when it comes to voter turnout if you want to win this thing.
Right. And I mean, that's a big gap. Like, it really shows that is a growth opportunity. It's in a strategically, it is a smart campaign stop for the Trump campaign. Surely they can get, you know, if the margin is something in around 65-70% Republican votes there, and they're only at 41, it seems like that is a good thing to focus on for them.
A former Republican Governor Tommy Thompson spoke at this rally in favor of Trump. Here's a little listen to what he had to say.
Just like Ronald Reagan said, tear down the wall. Donald Trump says we are going to defeat the Islamic terrorists. Remember that.
So Tommy Thompson, a legendary figure really at this point in Republican politics. Some Democrats look back wistfully to days where they could cooperate with him. What is noteworthy about Thompson's support of Trump?
Did he say, just like Ronald Reagan said, tear down this wall?
Yep.
Referring to Trump? That's not what I don't associate Trump with tearing down walls, but okay, all right. I guess he knows what he meant. So Thompson, I mean, it is significant. Thompson supported Ohio Governor John Kasich in the Republican primary. So he came up, it's not like the first time that he's said he's supporting Trump. But yeah, here's a guy who is well loved in that part of the state and really, you know, still has a good reputation statewide. He lost his Senate campaign, but it was a tight race, and I think he's generally pretty well regarded. So yeah, so having a star power there on the Trump train, and the guy does know how to fire up a crowd. I mean, you could hear it.
And if you're an old school Wisconsin Republican, not sure about this whole Donald Trump thing, maybe Tommy Thompson's a guy you listen to.
Sure, for sure. Also significant, I mean, or maybe significant, who knows what goes into these things, but not attending the rally was Governor Scott Walker, was not there, and Senator Ron Johnson, not there. So in a sense, Tommy Thompson and some, retired senator and some other folks were the biggest names. There were a couple of names who were not there.
Talking to Rob Mentzer from USA Today Network Wisconsin, looking at the big news of the week in the state. The Clinton campaign, we had a Clinton visit, not Hillary, Chelsea Clinton. Her daughter came to Wisconsin this week and Green Bay today. So Green Bay, swing area of the state, an important target for Democrats?
Sure. Green Bay is certainly more swingy than a Milwaukee, which is a heavily Democratic area, or than a Waukesha County for Republicans. And in particular, significant, Chelsea Clinton was appearing at an early voting rally. The sort of conventional wisdom is that Democratic voters tend to be a little harder to turn out than Republican voters. And so you see there are a lot of Democrats who will emphasize early voting. And since that judge's order order has reversed some of Wisconsin's restrictions. Early voting is in effect in a lot of places in Wisconsin, including Green Bay. And so this was a this was trying to not just rally support or get people excited, but they're actually like getting people to go vote today.
And early voting laws, had there been a little back and forth on those here in Wisconsin, a lot of court action. Early voting is happening in, what, a lot of the state, all of the state?
It's by municipality, so a lot of some places have it, some places don't, but most of the bigger cities have it, in some cases they've had it for a week or so.
We are talking to Rob Menser now from USA Today Network Wisconsin about the top state news stories this week. We'll move on from the presidential election to some other news. We'll stay in Green Bay area, though, a congressional election there. That's coming up in just a few minutes. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. And we're picking up our discussion now with Rob Menser of the USA Today Network Wisconsin. He joins us every Friday to talk about the top news stories from the past week.
And Rob, we were talking about the presidential election, not the only game in town. We've got to congressional elections, Senate race, local elections all over the state coming up in November. Let's look at one particular congressional district, the 8th. This is we're coming back to Green Bay area here. And people are reading tea leaves, watching who's spending on what on advertising to see if this is competitive. What are we seeing this week?
Yeah, so this is a bit of inside baseball, but it's interesting because what it might show about these about this race. So in the 8th congressional district, it includes Green Bay and Appleton and sort of northeastern Wisconsin. It was thought to be one of the best opportunities for Democrats to maybe pick up a House seat. The Republican congressman there, Representative Reed Ribble, is retiring. He's not seeking re-election, and with the prospect of Trump running fairly weak in Wisconsin, there was a thought that maybe Democratic candidate Tom Nelson, who's the Outagamie County executive, that he might have a chance to win. And maybe he can. We don't know that really. There are no public polls in the district. But one thing that happened this week was the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, the national organization that spends on these House races, took down a week's worth of television ads for Nelson in that district. And so the thinking, or anyway, this is what some Republican strategists wanted to argue, is that if Democrats really saw this as a strong opportunity for them, they would not be canceling ad spending.
Yeah, and there's always the thought that, oh, maybe this is something, there's some internal party polling or something like that that the public isn't seeing that's showing them, hey, don't waste your money here. What have we heard from the Democratic Congressional Committee itself on their?
So they say this is no big deal. There are more ads coming in October. This is just sort of routine stuff that they do week to week, deciding where to put their resources. And maybe so. I mean, listen, that's what they would say, though, right? I mean, this is the problem, and this is why I will hear on this program call for some public polling in this race. This would clear things up quickly.
Right. I mean, these congressional races, they're a big deal. In off-year elections, we pay more attention to them. The presidential race can really just take all the air out of the room for congressional races. You know, we're electing our entire state assembly and half of our state Senate. The presidential race really steals their thunder, doesn't it?
Right. It's amazing to the extent to which people really focus exclusively on the presidential race. But what seems to have happened here, Republicans nominated a strong candidate. Mike Gallagher is a former Marine, and he was endorsed by Ribble, who was reasonably popular in the district. And so Ribble is a never Trump guy. Ribble is not a Trump supporter. He's been a big and sticking with it, persistent critic of Trump. And so the best strategy for Democrats in this district would have been to try to tie the Republican candidate to Trump and say Trump, and maybe get on to Hillary Clinton's coattails. But it's sort of guesswork. It feels a little bit in the dark, but it seems like Gallagher is not heavily identified with Trump at this point in voters' minds, and that's probably where he wants to be at this point in the race.
And this is the swing district in Wisconsin, to the extent that anything's going to switch in the state, because a lot of the districts,
right,
I don't think it's any secret, were drawn to say Democrats have it now, you keep that, Republicans have that now, you keep that. This is the one where maybe there's wiggle room.
Right. There are virtually none. I mean, Milwaukee District is going to go Democratic every time. There are solid Republican districts for a couple of cycles. The 7th Congressional District, represented by Sean Duffy, in my neck of the woods in Wausau and points north, was seen as a district that could possibly swing, but no one's really talking about that this year. It is not on anyone's list, at least. So yeah, this is like the closest that we had for potential drama, and it's too early to call it. There's still over a month left, and who knows? Like I said, I don't see the polls. No one does. It's outside of sort of professional politicos, so we don't know. But yeah, it's seeming less dramatic today than it probably did a couple months ago.
Well, let's step off the campaign trail into the courtroom for our last couple minutes, Rob. On Monday, a federal judge threw out a lawsuit that was challenging Wisconsin's right to work laws. What happened there?
Yes, so this, of course, is the 2015 law that bans private labor unions from requiring workers to pay union fees, whether or not they belong to the union. And there are similar laws in Michigan and Indiana, and as well as a bunch of states in the South. It's a thing. And so, as is often the case with a controversial law in this day and age, as soon as it was passed, the legal challenges started rolling. One of these by an engineers union argued that the law violated the National Labor Relations Act, but this week that was tossed out because the Federal Circuit Court had already sort of been through this process, had already upheld Indiana's right to work law. So that is slapped down. The law is in effect, and it looks like it will probably stay that way.
And briefly, Rob, one more story. You're keeping an eye on a Milwaukee man stand-up paddling the entire Wisconsin River. Briefly, what?
Yeah, I love this guy. Jesse Heeb is going from the beginning to the end of the Wisconsin River, from the UP all the way 430 miles across the state. He's a filmmaker. He has a Facebook page called Gone Paddling the Film. I checked on his Facebook page just before I came on here today. He's supposed to finish up today. There's no post saying that he's actually made it, but I think it could happen at any moment, Rob.
Well, that's exciting. We'll watch for that and maybe give him an invite to talk to us on Central Time in the future. You're probably going to want to line up an interview too, Rob. I'll race you for that.
Sure.
Well, Rob, as always, thanks for joining us today.
All right. Thank you.
That's Robert Mentzer, storytelling editor with USA Today Network Wisconsin, based in Wausau, checking in on the top news stories of the week. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. Fall TV season got going this month. Historically, it's a big deal for the networks when they bring out their best shows and try to generate big advertising money.
It always has been a big deal, but in the era of Netflix and other streaming media services, does a new fall TV season still matter? We see other outlets unveiling new shows all across the calendar. Netflix premiered its big series Stranger Things, for example, in mid-July. We want to know what you think. Do you get into fall TV? Are there any new shows, favorites already in the first couple of weeks? Or don't you care anymore now that streaming services roll out shows all year long? Well, you'll watch them when you're good and ready. Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234.
Eric Deggans is with us now to take stock of the fall TV season. He's the TV critic at NPR. Eric, welcome to Central Time. Eric, you there?
I'm here.
There you are. Great. Thank you. Well, I want to start with a show that you really like. It's called Pitch, and it tells the story of the first female pitcher for Major League Baseball. Here it is.
Listen to this crowd. For the first time in history, a woman has taken the mound in a Major League Baseball game, and we are ready to go.
A girl will never be able to throw hard enough to compete with boys. Not as they start growing. It's biology and we can't change that. That's why we need a secret weapon.
What is it?
It's called a screwball.
That's from Pitch. That's from Fox. And we should point out that that is fiction, as far as I can tell. Did a little digging. That one, I have to say, Eric, that made me cry when I watched just the trailer. Now I'm scared to watch the actual show. What do you like about this one?
Well, what I like about this show is that even though you can sort of guess the arc that the pilot might take, I mean, this is a story about the first woman to compete alongside men in one of the four major sports in America, baseball. And it's something that's plausible. I mean, sports writers have talked about how this is possible. And she's competing as a pitcher, which makes a lot of sense. And, you can imagine how it might unfold. You could imagine that we see her on her first day and maybe she struggles a bit. And then in the end, sort of justifies her place in the lineup. I'm not really delivering any spoilers to say that's the arc of the pilot, but they come up with a lot of interesting twists. They give you, some really well-drawn characters. And in the end, you wind up being far more entertained, I think, by this show than you would expect to be, given that, you know, viewers are so sophisticated that they come to this show and they probably feel like they already know the story they're going to be told. They're surprised, and it's also done with a realism. This is the first network TV show to be officially partnered with Major League Baseball, so she actually plays for an actual team, the San Diego Padres, and they actually shoot in actual baseball stadiums, and they use the broadcast crew that also reports on the baseball games for Fox. So there's a realism to it in how the sports sequences are presented that is also very appealing.
Right, I was surprised that this show seemed so appealing to me. I haven't watched it yet, but I remember when I was growing up, we used to, for whatever reason, my family subscribed to the TV Guide, and I can remember fall TV season and being really excited for that TV Guide and looking through it and right. Wondering what was coming out. And I don't feel like that anymore, which made me wonder, you know, a question other people have asked, including you, Eric, does fall TV season mm-hmm. still matter? What do you say to that?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, you know, I have to be careful about this because I've been covering TV for a long time and it's easy to sort of be in the bubble of the industry. But fall is when everything really kind of starts. It's like back to school for the TV industry, if you can believe that. You know, broadcast shows have been off the air. They don't go into reruns as much as they used to, but they have not been in new episodes since May, most of the broadcast shows. And they all come back to new episodes. And then we get a bunch of new episodes. It's the most new content that we see come to television in one, you know, fell swoop. Because all the broadcast networks debut anywhere from 4 to 5 to sometimes 7 new shows in a fall season. So we get a rush of new material. And what's been interesting to me is that even though we talk about cable and we talk about streaming, if you look, Amazon debuted its new series from Woody Allen today. Netflix debuted its new Marvel superhero series, Luke Cage, today. It's arguably its most anticipated show of the year, if not, the biggest show of the year. We'll see how people react to it. It just debuted. HBO is debuting its long-awaited adaptation of Westworld on Sunday. So even the cable and the streaming outlets are debuting some of their biggest shows in the fall. So I think there's a cycle to the TV industry that everybody who's involved in it still kind of pays attention to. So even though we get new material throughout the year, fall is really important, and we're seeing some of the best new TV right now. And if you're somebody who consumes a lot of TV, you know, it sort of feels like everything's blossoming right now.
Right. So you're saying even though we do hear about the fall of the empire, and that is broadcast TV, it sounds like it does still have a center of gravity that pulls everybody in, including these streaming services that you just mentioned. And is that something you think is going to change? Can that last?
Well, one of the things I noticed, for example, is that the nation's attention kind of turns to television quite naturally in the fall. Again, you know, the most watched outlets on television are still the broadcast networks. They still draw bigger audiences than any other one platform. And that's when they come into new episodes. So they're on the cover of every magazine. Radio shows like this are doing segments about fall TV. Television shows are doing segments about fall TV. Everybody's thinking about fall television. It's a new media version of, you know, when you looked at the TV Guide and wondered what might be coming in fall. And so it makes sense for the cable companies and the streaming companies to also take advantage of that the turn in attention and debut some of their strongest stuff during this time as well. So it's almost like a snowball that starts rolling. You know, once the streaming services and cable get in the habit of debuting some of their strongest stuff in fall, people get used to seeing strong stuff in fall, and it all kind of gathers steam. So I think the fall still matters a lot. It just matters in a little bit of a different way, and there's a lot more platforms that are big players in the way that fall television unfolds over the next month or so.
Now, you mentioned one show that is not on broadcast TV, Luke Cage. Let's take a listen.
Still not sure what I am. I'm just living my life day to day.
You should be out there helping people.
You think I asked for any of this? I was put in some tank like an exotic fish. Came out with abilities. I just want to be left the hell alone.
Well, that would be a waste.
And what do you know about that particular show, Eric?
Yeah, well, so that show, I hung out quite a bit with the showrunner. His name is Cheo Hodari Coker. And he was an important rap journalist. Back in the 90s, as rap was emerging as a cultural force, he was on the front lines covering the careers of people like the Notorious B.I.G. and the Wu-Tang Clan. And then he transitioned into film and television writing and worked on shows like Ray Donovan and NCIS and Southland. And so with Luke Cage, what he's been able to do is take all these influences from his days covering hip-hop and bring it to a TV show that's an adventure show. It's one of Marvel's first black superheroes. It's the first TV show to feature a black superhero in like 20 years. It's Marvel's first TV show to feature a black superhero, and it's an almost all-black cast. And it's a homage to blaxploitation movies. There's a lot of hip-hop swagger in it. And it's an updating of the character, which was originally created as a response to the popularity of blaxploitation movies in the 1970s. So there's a lot going on in this series, and it's wonderful to see, because I think it's a great symbol of where TV is headed, where Netflix found a really promising and talented creator of color that gave him the resources to tell the story that he needed to tell. And he took all of these influences, everything from the crime novels of Walter Mosley to the early days of hip-hop to Shaft and some of the 1970s blaxploitation movies, and put it together in this new product that feels fresh and new, but also reminds you of all these great things from the past at the same time.
I want to get a caller in on this. We've got Matt on the line with us from Milwaukee. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how you doing?
Good, thanks.
Good. I'm one of the regional executives for a popular cable outlet, and you know, the industry is seeing a downturn, and like your guest said, we're seeing more and more broadcast TV still being at the forefront. But if the streaming services keep moving the way they do, cable and satellite TV just won't be able to keep up. And one of the reasons I feel that the fall series is the most important, especially Wisconsin, is that we just don't get to go outside.
That's fair.
Right.
We've got a little thing called winter
see,
here in
Florida,
Wisconsin.
So I don't quite relate to that in the same way that you guys do. But yeah, that's very true. You know, most of the country, you know, finds itself turning into winter, fall and winter in these months. And so television becomes more important. One of the reasons why summer was always sort of a fallow time for television is because in most of the country, it's nicer and people are outside and they're not necessarily in front of their TVs. Now that we have mobile technology, and now that people have so many screens that they're interfacing with, that's less of an issue, and people are able to bring television with them wherever they want to go. But it is still the general dynamic, and again, I think that's why the TV industry kind of retains the cycles that it still has.
And just super briefly before we let you go, Eric, I want to talk about one more show that you really like. This is a show called The Good Place. Here's a clip.
You, Eleanor Shellstrop, are dead.
Cool.
You're okay, Eleanor. You're in the good place. You are here because you got innocent people off death row.
You are my soulmate.
Cool. Bring it in, man. You'll stand by my side no matter what, right?
Of course I will.
I wasn't a lawyer. There's been a big mistake. I'm not supposed to be here.
Wait, what?
The Good Life, couple heavy hitters there. Ted Danson, I think it's Kristen Bell in the other role there. Yep. Just briefly as we wrap, what do you like about this one, Eric?
Well, it's very inventive, as you can tell. It's sort of like Defending Your Life meets kind of a madcap comedy. It is a great way of talking about what happens when you pass on, in a way. And it's a show that actually, in a way, I mean, it's very funny, and it's very much about making you laugh. But it also sort of asks this question of, like, what makes a good person? You know, what makes somebody good? And as this person who mistakenly landed in the good place and does not want to go to the bad place, you know, she tries to figure out how to be good. And she's one of the most selfish people on the planet, so it's a very long road for her. It's been interesting to note this fall already. I mean, the fall season technically started the third week of September. Already we've had three shows picked up for full seasons by the networks. This Is Us on NBC, Designated Survivor, and Speechless on ABC. I think it's an indication that the quality of the new shows on the broadcast networks has been much better this year. Last year, we were looking at retreads of The Muppets and Uncle Buck and just awful stuff, and now they seem to have raised their game, I think, in response to all the competition that they have with cable and streaming services.
Well, Eric, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me.
That was Eric Deggans, TV critic for NPR, with us there to talk about the start of fall TV season.